Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Want to get a little more from every sip? Smartwater Alkaline doesn't just taste crisp and pure. It's loaded with everything you need to perform at your best, whether you're running marathons or boardroom meetings. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.
What's up, everybody? It's Anthony Cazenza with the Orange and Black Insider Bengals podcast and CincyJungle.com. Excited for this episode. We've been excited for a while. We've got two very special guests and couldn't be more happy that they've carved out some time for us. John, happy Friday, bud. I'm going to allow you the honors of introducing our esteemed guests that are joining us today.
Oh, happy Friday. What are you talking about, disparage? I don't even know who you are. How can I disparage you? I'm just meeting you for the first time. But it has been a while since we talked to one of these guests, and it's actually been never since we talked to another. But they're two rising stars in the Cincinnati Bengals community. They have a little-known podcast known as the Locked On Bengals Podcast. I'm sure you guys have heard of it. But introducing to the show, Jake Lisco and James Rupine. How are you guys doing?
You know, from our humble beginnings, we're just happy to be here.
Yeah, thanks for having us. I'm a little nervous. I don't know if I'm going to be able to handle it, but how you doing, guys?
There's a lot of pressure.
Yeah. Hey, there's a lot of stars on this show, I guess, huh? But great to have you guys on the show. It's we've long enjoyed all of the stuff that you guys put out, obviously, and we've been looking forward to this. When I told John before you guys got on, I'm ready to take it easy and take a back seat and let the smart people talk today. So that's what's going to happen. I'm going to listen to you three primarily because you guys are the smart ones. And I'm going to sit back and just kind of relax because it's Friday afternoon finally where I am. And we're gonna get to it. We're going to field some questions. We're going to do our own little chatting as well. We're going to field some of your questions as we usually do on Listener Questions Live. You can get those to us in a number of ways. Via email the obinsider@gmail.com, call or text 949-542-6. What's the number? I already forget. 6241. Let's find that out again. I already forgot the number. Good Lord. And you can tweet us, any of us, if you follow us on Twitter, you can tweet us and get those to us. And or there are a number of live chats going on, whether it's on our YouTube channel, Facebook, all that kind of stuff. We got it going on. So I will start, gentlemen, if you don't mind, with a text that came through to us. How difficult do we want to? Do we want to start with? Do we want to start with a softball one? Do we want to start with a hard one?
Is this philosophical or is this just like
hit us with it, man?
All right, let's go. From area code 442. Hey guys, love the show. I'm wondering what it takes to make a culture shift within an organization. I've heard of the quote Burrow effect, and I wonder if one guy can be a catalyst for a culture shift. By culture shift, I mean getting players on board, including guys in the organization or outside, which are free agents. I think an example is Brady pulling in people to Tampa Bay. Jake, would you like to start off on potentially responding to that one? That's not an easy one, I don't think, but a good one to start off with, I think.
Yeah, there's a lot there, right?
Yeah.
I think there's so much a player can do, and there's a lot that's on the organization as well. You can go back to Marvin Lewis, right? In Cincinnati, hiring Marvin Lewis, there was a significant culture shift that happened. And at some point that culture shift, became the norm. And then Zach Taylor comes. And I think all of that work that Marvin had done and the way that Marvin handled the team and the way that Marvin interacted with players kind of went away. And so there's all these different layers of team culture that I think you have to think about. One of them is the people that are constant. So the ownership, front office in the Bengals case, not necessarily other organizations. Then there's the culture that your coach has established that's going to be informed by that coach's personal experience and the organization's, you know, mission statement, for lack of a better word, but, you know, what's being perpetuated by the ownership group that continues to persist. And then there's whatever aspect the players add to it. So when you talk about what can Joe Burrow do, we think back to Joe Burrow's time at LSU, the stories we heard about him keeping guys accountable when they came late to practice and giving him shit for, or I guess that was back in the high school camp. You know, there was a guy that was late to a camp practice or something, and Joe Burrow held him accountable for it, and it was caught on camera when he was very much a kid. And I think you see some of this now. You hear about it with specifically Ja'Marr Chase, and you see the way that Burrow talks to Chase, and they communicate about, this is the way you're going to run that route. And obviously, with a player like Chase, he's getting coached directly by Coach Walters. He's getting coached directly by Zach Taylor, Brian Callahan. And all these guys are having an impact on the way that players like Chase, new to the organization, not high on the totem pole yet, are existing and interpreting what it means to be a Cincinnati Bengal. So really, there's an impact from all of these levels. And when people criticize the Bengals, it's generally a criticism that starts at the top, right? It starts at Mike Brown and what he perpetuates by being the owner of the Bengals and the disaster that his ownership period has frankly been since he took over. Right. And mm-hmm. the lost decade and the failure to win a playoff game and the failure to extend some key players. And that's the criticism, right? To be really negative about it. Marvin, of course, praised for what he did in getting the team to actually be a professional organization, the changes that he made. You know, you hear Willie Anderson talk about the socks and the, you know, you got to buy your own Gatorade and all this stuff. And that starts to change with Marvin. And then now they've modernized the organization in that sense. There's still a lot, I think, that the ownership group needs to do, right? And there's only so much that a player like Joe Burrow can do. Because you think about Carson Palmer. Palmer wanted to come in. He had that same mentality, I think, that Joe Burrow does right now when he got to Cincinnati. He was like, I can come in, I can fix this thing. And he was ready to do that. He was eager to do that. He was excited to do that. We know that was a story where his agents, his prospective agents, had plans for him. This is how we're going to get you out of Cincinnati. The agent that Carson eventually hires is the one that listens to him when he says, no, I want to fix it. I want to go to Cincinnati. I'm sure Joe Burrow had the same thing. I'm sure Joe Burrow has the same ideas in a lot of ways. But he can only do so much, right? Like, he can hold players accountable. But, you know, how much is ownership listening to him? That's a question. How much is Elizabeth Blackburn coming in there and changing the way they interact with their star players? I don't know. How much is the modernization of the NFL and players seizing more power impacting the way the Bengals do business? I don't know. Those are the questions that I still have that come to mind for me when you ask this question about how much can a guy like Joe Burrow change the culture in Cincinnati?
James, I'd love to hear from you on this too. And I got a question that kind of based on what Jake was saying there that I'd like to ask all of you, once you guys give your thoughts on this, because I thought that was really well said by Jake there. But James, you've been covering this team for a number of years. You've seen a lot of the things with Marvin and now Zach and all of that. I mean, your thoughts on culture changes, and maybe the question I kind of have, just to kind of piggyback a little bit on what Jake was saying, is, that's a message that Zach Taylor has been preaching, you know, this culture shift, and we're going to do things this way, maybe modernize some more things on top of what Marvin did. I mean, are you buying into, now that we're in year three, that critical year for head coaches, this young head coach and somewhat inexperienced staff when they all took over a couple of years ago? I mean, are you kind of buying that this continued shift is taking place?
It certainly is. I buy that now. Whether or not the shift is going to be successful as far as Zach Taylor's culture, we'll see this season. You know, I'm certainly not sold on that. I don't even know if I would buy Zach Taylor's stock right now, but I buy that this is his team, that at some point over the past 3 years, and maybe it was when Zach was interviewing or when he first got hired, he said, all right, Mr. Brown, I can't work with these guys. We're going to have to slowly bring in my guys. And you've seen that, right? Carlos Dunlap, the Geno Atkins, the A.J. Green, and they tried it with A.J. Green. Clearly, it didn't work. And so, yeah, Zach's got his guys now. And John and I were at the Mock Turtle Soup Luncheon, and Mike's like, yeah, it's Zach's team. And so when he says that, it's like, okay, pressure's on. And so that's the part of it. His ownership feels like today they've given Zach what he needs to win. And you could make an argument for, you know, both ways, really, right? You could say new quarterback, new receivers, completely revamped defense with a bunch of money spent on that side of the ball. And so, yeah, Zach, go win. On the other side, you could say, well, why didn't you invest more in the offensive line? So we could go back and forth on that. But yeah, I think culture-wise, and going back to the first question, only a few guys ever, player-wise, could completely transform a culture. Tom Brady didn't even do that initially. It was Belichick's culture. And Brady was just kind of the straw that stirred the drink and kept everything upright. Peyton Manning did it in Indianapolis, and it was his team. And I think that that's sort of what the Bengals are hoping to do with Burrow, which is a lot to ask for, right? That's a very high bar to get to. So it can be done with a player. It's just extremely rare. And even some of the greats like Tom Brady, you're right. He did it in Tampa Bay, but he didn't set that culture in New England initially when they started winning Super Bowls.
Well, I don't even know if he did it in Tampa, right? Because Bruce, it's not like Bruce Arians is like some fresh off the, fresh off the coaching block kind of guy. Like, he certainly helped. I definitely think he deserves credit for what happened in Tampa and like some of the players who wanted to go there. That's like NBA stuff, right? That's ring chasing. Like, Brady can get me a ring. Bruce Arians is a competent enough coach. And that marriage between Arians and Brady was also important. So it just highlights, I think, how hard it is for an individual player, even if they are as accomplished and big as Brady, to make those changes.
John, your thoughts on Burrow?
Yeah, Joe Burrow couldn't change the culture of the Dallas Cowboys. That culture is defined by Jerry Jones and whatnot. He can change the culture of the Cincinnati Bengals, because there's a difference, stark contrast, in the Bengals franchise compared to other high-powered franchises, other successful franchises, not calling the Cowboys successful in any way, shape, or form the last 25 years. But I think there's a difference in the image and the perception of certain franchises. They're going to be paying Joe Burrow a lot of money in a handful of years, and they aren't really going to have a choice but to listen to his input. As with any of the 32 franchises, they are forced to basically call in their quarterback, ask them what they want to do, have them give them a primary seat at the table for most of these organizational decisions. And I think, like James was alluding to, this is going to be a big year to determine, is the shift in potential success mainly attributed to Burrow, or is it just Zach Taylor's whole scheme coming together and his third year of his coaching staff? Is that the primary reason why this is now going in the right direction? I think we're going to learn a lot about that this year. I think we're going to find out the answer to this pretty damn soon.
I'm my thoughts on this, I guess, would be kind of echoing a lot of what you said, but Joe Burrow is kind of part of the process. I mean, he's a piece of that puzzle to change the culture. I heard that Jeff Hobson was on, I think it was Bengal Jim's podcast earlier this week, and Hobson said something to the effect of Burrow kind of has that Boomer Esiason, grab everybody by the haunches type of leadership style. And he hasn't seen that really from a quarterback, at least Hobson said, since Boomer was here with the team. But I think that's part of it. And that team in 88 had a Sam Wyche, a guy that was also a rah-rah guy, but also had a great offensive mind. They had the pieces up front in the offensive line, and they were building the team the way it should have been built for success. And I think like what Jake brought up earlier about Elizabeth Blackburn, I think that's a key going forward in terms of how this team is going to operate and how things end up changing in terms of a culture shift. We've seen some things this year, whether if you want to point to something maybe as small as the uniform changes, but obviously the Ring of Honor, that was kind of a big step forward. All of that stuff is kind of part of the process, as is Joe Burrow. He's a big part of it, but I think there's still, everybody's got to believe in the coach and the direction of where things are going. The quarterback, obviously, leader on the field. And then, of course, people got to believe that ownership is putting them in position to be able to win championships and not just say that they are doing that. So I think a lot of things, like what you guys said, a lot of things remain to be seen. There are some good things that are being put in place as of this year, but we'll see. I think this year is a big barometer as to whether the Zach Taylor culture shift is moving in the right direction. I don't know, Jake and James, if you are able to see the live comments on the, at least in the YouTube and Facebook, if there's anything that strikes you there, feel free to shout one of those out. I'm going to toss it to John. John, do you see one that you want to get to next year?
I just wanted to ask both James and Jake just a question about the last month or so. You guys have been obviously doing daily shows, the podcast. James has been down on the field for every practice, I think, except I guess was today the last practice that you guys could go out there? What did they basically shut you guys down today?
Yeah, today was the first half hour session. So yesterday was the final practice where we could video and stuff like that.
So this is the first training camp post, I guess, last year with COVID and everything. No one had access to anything. I guess in your guys' coverage of training camp, what has been something that has annoyed you, I guess, with what's been coming out of camp that you've unfortunately had to talk about? It's like is your thoughts and your perception of how training camp discourse has become now, is that like changed with things kind of going back to this? Is there something that kind of stands out to you that you wish you didn't have to talk about, but you unfortunately had to do because it was topical?
Well, yeah. I mean, to me, it's the fact that you almost have to dissect everything and then everyone's going to have a reaction. Okay. So, I've talked with Paul Daner Jr. about this at The Athletic. He writes about how, yeah, Jamar isn't separating that much against Chidobe Awuzie, right? And it's like blows up because the fantasy heads get it. And I love fantasy football. I'm in a bunch of leagues, so I'm not knocking that. But all of a sudden, it's an issue now. Jamar isn't getting separation. Or Burrow looked weird in the pocket, and now it just blows up. And 2 days later, he's fine after he answers questions about it, and we've seen him grow, right? And so that I think that's part of it is like there's so many eyeballs on, you know, every little nugget that comes out. So like the Jamar thing in Washington, like he had 3 drops and all these people were reacting to it. Well, he's had drop issues. It wasn't a shock really, right? It was something that we had talked about since OTAs and rookie minicamp on Locked On Bengals. And, you know, hopefully he's ironed it out because he's looked a lot better the past 3 days. But I think that's it. The minutia of, oh my God, this happened today. I can't believe it, right? Trey Waynes gets injured, the hamstring. Everyone just loses their minds. Oh my God, I can't believe. Like, look, it was a bad contract, but he's been pretty good in camp the other day when he hurt his hamstring. So just little things like that are kind of annoying. It comes with the job, by the way. I'm not complaining, but that stands out as you pose that question.
There's been a real change in the way people, I think, react to NFL news. And I feel like it's worse this year than it ever has been, or maybe I'm just now noticing it for the first time, but it's not like this is the first time that I've done daily shows about Bengals camp. This is the third year we've done it, I think. Last year, James, you and I did it, right? And, mm-hmm. and that was in the COVID year. It was weird. The year before that, Joe and I did it. And I mean, when Joe and I did it, I guess, you know, we didn't have somebody there every day. So we're reacting to, like, you know, your videos that you're posting on Twitter, John, because you were there a lot and you were, you know, that's what I miss, by the way, is all the fan videos that we used to get. And now with it only being media and I'm really restricting video, it makes it a lot harder because, you know, for me, I can only go on what, you know, James and Paul and all these guys tell us. And I have more access than many do because I can, you know, text James and be like, hey, look at this thing. And then he can tell me what he sees. But I do think that these little moments are getting magnified more than they ever have. And there's more of a microscope than I ever recall there being. And the reactions to these little moments, an interception in camp. Think about like Tua, even like you think about not a Bengals guy. Tua throws like 5 picks, and they're people taking victory laps. Like, oh yeah, Tua, he's not it. He threw 5 picks in a go back to Patrick Mahomes' rookie year. He threw 5 picks in a practice. How'd he turn out? I'm not saying Tua is going to be Mahomes. I'm not saying Burrow is going to be Mahomes. I'm not saying any of these things. It's just the point is people are overreacting like crazy to like an incident in practice. And yeah, there have been specific things. Like we've talked about Jamar Chase and focused on Jamar Chase every day this week for at least probably 5 minutes, right? And in one of our shows, it was like the last thing we talked about in our practice recap segment. And I was like, man, James, I'm so happy we're getting to Jamar last. And this isn't the headline. So we you know, this is like he's had 4 days of solid practices. Maybe we don't need to talk about this anymore. And you know, with drops specifically, it's bothered me. And I've made this point the last 2 days on our podcast. And I've said, look, like receivers drop passes. Every single receiver in the NFL, 99.9% of receivers in the NFL drop a pass in a season, especially the guys that are high volume. You don't really care, or maybe it bothers you for a little bit if Jamar Chase drops a pass. But then if he goes and catches 5 more for 100 yards and a touchdown, which he did on yesterday, right? Yep. Then you don't care. And so I think that, you know, there's all this hyper reaction and hyper scrutinization of things. And it's just like, this has probably been going on in camps for forever, right? And we were talking about Jerry Rice. Remember, James, yesterday we were talking about the Jerry Rice story that apparently Frank Pollock sent to Brian Callahan. And Callahan, and you know, that's his own story. But what that made me think about is like in the 80s when Jerry Rice was a rookie, you know, the fan of the 49ers who no longer lives in San Francisco probably isn't as aware of that until a few weeks later. And by the time they become aware of that, because they're reading it in the newspaper, because USA Today picks it up like 10 weeks later or something. Oh, Jerry Rice, the rookie, he's having drop issues, huh? Well, then at that point, maybe it's a real issue. And so we're not looking at a training camp report and be like, oh, everything's on fire. Trey Waynes is made of glass because he got injured again. He missed 4 games in his time with the Vikings. And now he's made of glass because he had a pec injury and he's had some hamstring injuries. Come on, guys.
But we don't care about practice at all. We don't care about practice during the season at all. It's only for this month because it's the only thing that's happening.
Mm-hmm. And it's when they're the rawest, right? They're still learning the system. Things are being installed, especially Jamar, right? And it's, look, is it worth pointing out? Of course, if he has 4 drops in practice, we should mention it. But it doesn't mean everything needs to be taken to this extreme. And everything's going there one way or the other because everyone has a voice. And like Jake said, it's magnified.
And like you said, like when Paul writes about a thing, he reports there's a rep where Joe Burrow doesn't step into a throw or he lifts his left leg, I think is what Paul said. He looked uncomfortable. Like what's Paul, is Paul supposed to just not write that? No, like you write about it. And then I don't know what we do, right? As people who are covering this at this point to talk about these things that have happened and try to, and we try on Locked On Bengals anyway to say, yeah, he dropped these passes. Don't worry about it, guys. But like, we don't have control over that, right?
We don't. And Twitter, unfortunately, it's a double-edged sword, right, guys? I'm sure you guys know, you know, you report something or you have an opinion on something. And then, of course, the knee-jerk reactionary stuff comes out. I've been guilty of it. You know, you hear some bad news about the Bengals. And you, oh, boy. Here, I mean, we've watched
the Bengals for a long time. Think about the jerseys. Yeah. The jerseys on the hanger. I mean, that's a great example of it.
Yeah.
Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Life moves pretty fast. Are you drinking water that can keep up? Smartwater Alkaline has everything you need to stay hydrated, no matter where your day takes you. Whether you're pitching a tent or your next big idea, Smartwater Alkaline can help you perform your best. It delivers a pure, crisp taste that makes it the perfect chaser after a big workout. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.
So we got a text from 905 area code. Hey, Anthony, John, this is Clark from Toronto.
Hey, Canada, what's up?
Sort of by Jake there. Been a big fan of the podcast for a few years now. I was wondering, who do you think has the edge for backup corner position between Eli Apple, Phillips, or maybe a surprise in Jalen Davis? Jalen Davis had the couple of tackles for loss in the last game against Washington, one of which might be the starter week one with the Waynes injury. We were just talking about Trey Waynes a little bit, so I thought this was appropriate to bring up. I haven't heard much talk about Eli Apple, and I know Phillips is poised for a major special teams role. Thanks, Hude. James, you want to bat lead off on this one for us?
For sure. Yeah, it's Eli Apple. He's the clear-cut guy who will replace Waynes in the starting lineup. I think he's their fourth corner, so to speak. Darius Phillips is 5, and if he needs to play outside, he will. But he's Mike Hilton's backup, and both are going to make the team. And then as for Jalen Davis, I think he's got a good shot at that 6th cornerback spot, and we'll see if he can build off of what he's done throughout training camp and through 2 preseason games on Sunday. But as of now, I have him on my 53. I think he's played great. I think he's earned a spot, and we'll see it. But especially if Waynes is dinged up, or maybe it's a serious injury where he's going to be out and miss a little bit of time. Hopefully not. But if that's the case, then I certainly see a path where Davis is on this team week one.
Personally speaking, I hope Waynes is healthy for week one because I will be there. But just for him going up against his former team, I just hope he goes out, plays well, and just shuts all of us up to talk about, you know, the contract and his injuries and all that kind of stuff. I don't know if John, do you have any thoughts on the question here from Clark in Toronto about the defensive back situation?
Yeah, we talked about the potential impact of a Waynes injury because we don't know the severity that he's being listed as day-to-day, so who knows how long that actually is. But potentially one of Winston, Rose, or Tony Brown could potentially make week one, depending on how bad Wayne's injury actually is, and they would just need six cornerbacks for that. But James, like Jalen Davis has mainly been in the slot during preseason. Do you think that Darius Phillips would come off the bench if Mike Hilton gets hurt, or that would go now to Davis because of how impressive he's been?
Yeah, it's that part is interesting. I would say as of now, it's still probably Phillips. But maybe – because it's weird. Because if you ask, like, Jake, he's going to say, yeah, Phillips seems like he should be outside more. And with his ball skills and stuff, you'd put him outside. But it seems like the coaching staff likes him as the nickel. But if you have another capable nickel behind Mike Hilton, then maybe you switch it up a little bit. So – and it's not just Jake saying that. I just used you as an example, Jake.
Well, that's exactly what I would say, though. You're right. Yeah, like, I would say Phillips should probably be outside, because when he's been in the slot, he hasn't been very good, and he's up and down certainly outside. But anyway, continue, James.
But, yeah, his ball skills on the outside, it makes sense, right? And that's the thing. Now, is there a potential scenario where Davis jumps Phillips in the cornerback room? If he's more consistent, I think so. I think going into camp, I would have said that this coaching staff just in general, I wouldn't have said it about Davis, but I would have said it about Phillips. They need to see consistency from him. And if they don't, then, you know, it can be in jeopardy. And overall, I think he's been pretty good in camp. He's gotten beat a couple times, got beat against Washington with Jake's guy, Dyami Brown. But, you know, we'll see. But I would still be surprised if Davis leapfrogs Phillips at this stage.
I agree. But I do think that if Eli Apple gets hurt again, and he's been battling injuries in training camp, then it's Phillips will go out of the slot. He'll go outside, and Jalen Davis will go to the slot. They're not going to put Jalen Davis is like strictly a slot corner, I think, because of his size. He's what, like 5'8", or maybe he's 5'10". I don't remember, but he's like, if they have to put Jalen Davis outside, it might be rough. So to John's point, I hadn't really considered that the possibility of Tony Brown or Winston Rose actually making the team. I don't think they make the 53. I think they would be like practice squad call-ups in that first week if they need it, because I don't think they can spare a 53-man roster spot for a seventh corner. And that's even if they put Joseph Osai on the IR before cutdown, which I think they might have to, unless they get like a very positive, you know, 1 week, because they have some time. So like, they'll probably do like an MRI maybe a week after the surgery and see how things are going. Because sometimes with these surgeries, they don't, like, the repair doesn't take, and they end up having to cut it out because whatever they try to do in the repair doesn't work. Some basketball player, I think that happened to. Can't remember. But, I just can't see them carrying seven corners. I mean, with having to carry Adeniji onto the 53, which seems like that's going to be a thing because he tore his pec early. Maybe he can get back. I don't know. I don't know if they can make that work.
I'm kind of with you, it sounds like, a little bit on Darius Phillips, Jake. The guy just has the athleticism and everything, but his feast or famine play just drives me nuts sometimes, particularly on the outside. You go back to that second Cleveland game last year where he had the interception early in the game, and then he let up just big reception after big reception on the outside, and it's the same exact game maybe two quarters later, right? It's just like, oh my gosh, what? And that's unfortunately kind of been the story with him. You know, he's got the athleticism, he's got that big playability, but as you said, James, he's kind of fifth on the pecking order now because he's just not dependable on a snap to snap basis on the outside. And so that's just one of the guys. I love the upside. I love the fact that he can change the trajectory of a game with a pick six or a big interception, but he also can change it the other way with allowing some big catches. So, interesting to see how that's going to shake out. A deep group. And I know Jake and James, it sounds like Awuzie has been one of the best players at camp so far this year. And he's been a pretty good pickup for that group. I know we're talking more back end with the question we received, but I've liked what I've been hearing and seeing to a limited degree of Awuzie.
For sure. Extremely impressive. Maybe the most impressive defensive player in camp, and has made Jamar Chase's life hell, has made it really tough on him, which is good. You want it to be tough on him early on. And again, so that's part of it, is you have this hungry veteran cornerback who's angry that he was injured last year and anxious to prove himself after signing this deal. And this fifth pick is the guy he's seen across from him. He's going to try to eat that dude alive. And you know, it's not like Chase hasn't beat him, and he has, especially this week, I think, really hit his stride. when it comes to, you know, winning matchups against these cornerbacks. But Awuzie has been extremely impressive. And it's not just against Chase. He's done it against Higgins and, you know, some of these backups, you know, Auden Tate and guys like that. And he's just a quality player. And you saw it. The thing is with this defense in general, it was kind of cool seeing them beat up on the Bengals offense early in camp, but you're like, is it going to translate? Well, so far through two preseason games, it has translated. And I know Awuzie didn't get that interception, but he made a nice play and stuck right with Terry McLaurin last week. So I think that that is a very promising sign. So yeah, I'm encouraged and would not be shocked at all. Even if Waynes is 100% healthy, if we're talking about Awuzie being cornerback one, if we have to, you know, give 1-2 or 1 and 1A, I think Awuzie might be the best corner on the team.
It does seem like ridiculous how much improved Awuzie and Jalen Davis, for that matter, have looked compared to what we saw them last year. Like the jump that Davis has taken when he was thrown out there last year to now is very noticeable. I wanted to get to this question from Stuart Monty in the YouTube chat, and just going to throw it out to you three. The first one who answers gets the answer. Is there a part of the team that is terribly bad to you? I don't see it.
Who wants to take that one first?
I mean, I will. Jake, are you good? You want me to go?
Yeah, go. I'll see if okay. I agree with you.
Terribly bad? I mean, I'm going to do it. I mean, the interior of their offensive line right now is probably the biggest concern, right? The other thing would be, I guess, the edge position, those two things. Do they have an elite pass rusher? No. Maybe it's Hendrickson, but I don't think so. So that's a concern. But still, like, Quentin Spain and Xavier Suofilo are decent, and I'm okay with one of them starting. You have both of them starting. You have Trey Hopkins coming back from a torn ACL. The interior of that line is still a big question mark. I think they bring some stability, but I have plenty of questions about it. So that would be my biggest concern going into week one, at least as of right now, before that final preseason game.
Yeah, I don't have a – like – there is a high-end outcome for the offensive guards that is fine.
Sure.
That's the high end, right? And I'm talking about the guys projected to currently start week one. I think Deontay Smith has a very bright future. I'm very encouraged for Deontay Smith, but not in week one. I mean, we haven't seen enough, I don't think. And so Xavier Suofilo and Quentin Spain are some guys that Quentin Spain has obviously played some great football in his career. It's been a few years. And fans really like what he did last year. He stepped in, he played a bunch of positions, including left tackle for some reason. And Jim Turner loved to play career guards at left tackle, John Jerry, Quentin Spain. I don't know why he liked doing that, but we don't have to see that anymore, hopefully. But there's a world where these guys are the career, you know, Quentin Spain's career continues to be what it is, where his best years are behind him. That could be a thing. Could be a thing where Xavier Suofilo continues to look like the guy that was a backup for the Cowboys for the Cowboys and was okay. And, you know, is a fine backup who now you're starting. And, you know, that's really what Bobby Hart was for a long time in Cincinnati. Bobby Hart was a fine backup who was starting and would just get absolutely exposed at times. And that could be the case with these guards. And I also don't think we know what we're getting with Trey Hopkins. Pretty confident, relatively confident in Trey Hopkins, but even so, like, you're talking about an average of best center. Like, we really like Trey Hopkins. He's a very smart player. He's got a great personality. He's a good person to have in the locker room. But in terms of his, like, ability at center, I wouldn't be mad if they found a better center. Like, when Corey Linsley was available, that's the guy James and I talked about. I would have preferred they had gone after a guard, but if they're going to improve the offensive line, you go get a center. You're making your offensive line better. So I think there are some questions along the interior offensive line. I don't know if you're calling them terrible, but I mean, NFL teams should not have a terrible position group. If you have a terrible position group, you're in a bad place, and that's unfortunately where the Bengals have been. So maybe not having one is an improvement right now.
Well, I think it goes beyond than just position groups. It could just be like an aspect of the team. Like, for me, it's not necessarily just the offensive line. I think right now it's the run blocking portion of the offensive line. I think right now the five that they have are considerably better at pass protection than necessarily run blocking. We haven't really seen that from high volume or a high sample size in the preseason so far. And honestly, the sample size has been low for pass blocking, but right now it looks like the strength of the unit, which I guess you would take compared to the inverse. If they could not pass block, that would just be absolutely awful. But Anthony, what do you think?
It's hard to disagree with you guys about the interior of the offensive line. The only other position group, just to kind of pivot a little bit of a talking point here, I wouldn't even call it bad. I wouldn't call it terrible. I would just say it's a little bit of an unknown as linebacker. I like some things we've seen from Logan Wilson in his second year. There's been some ups and downs with Jermaine Pratt. I think there's a lot of upside to Akeem Davis-Gaither, but there's just how much growth are some of these young guys going to show? What's going on with Jordan Evan? You know, there's just some questions there. I wouldn't lump it in the same category as necessarily as the interior offensive line, but linebacker is one that, you know, we're talking about the secondary and a lot of the depth there. The Bengals did a good job over the past couple of years to shore up their, especially this year, shore up their defensive line because they got absolutely eaten alive by injury up front there last year. So I think there's a little less concern for me there. Obviously, interior of the offensive line tops the list for this question. I guess I would say, just to have a little bit of a different talking point, linebackers a little bit in that conversation for me. But I've told John when we've previewed that position group, I actually, because there's not really super high expectations for that group, I'm kind of quietly excited a little bit to see what some of those young guys in that group can do. But there's still, just for me, there's some unknowns there. I don't know if you guys feel the same way. I do want to ask, though, about you guys quickly before we talk about Symbol and then spend a few more minutes before we get on out of here. Michael Jordan, he's showing quite a bit this preseason, some really high mid-80s PFF pass blocking grades, granted limited snaps, but in two games, he looks like a different player. John and I talked about it on one of our shows recently. I would love to hear from you guys, Jake and James, about your thoughts on the progress there. Are you buying into it as a little bit of a fool's gold at this point in time, or is this recommitment to the offseason workout, working with Willie Anderson this offseason? Do you think that's actually showing, and he's in that pivotal year three in terms of development as an NFL player?
Yeah. Go ahead, James. You got to tell us which one of us you want to talk.
I do think I'll be quick. I do think he's improved. I do. You know, he's not the same player that he was last November, last December. That being said, he's still – the reason he's not starting is consistency. And there are going to be times when he does the wrong thing or misses a block. You're right. Like, the PFF scores are good. But clearly the Bengals coaching staff, they gave him every opportunity to win a job early in camp. I mean, it was crazy. It was – remember the first depth chart? Michael Jordan's out there, and, you know, he's getting reps with the ones. And it was one of those – camp reactions, right? That was another one that I had forgot about. And, you know, we talked about the optics of it and everything like that. But I do think he is better. And Frank Pollock was like, man, this kid could be really good. And I think Pollock probably still thinks that. But there's clearly a lack of consistency, because otherwise, why wouldn't he play? Why wouldn't he be the starter? And I guess he could still go out there against Miami and win the job. I just don't see that happening. I don't think that's realistic. I think it's Xavier Suofilo and Quentin Spain. But yeah, I think Jordan's better, and that's the benefit. Is now, if one of these guys goes down, well, Jordan comes in. Maybe there's not a huge drop off, and, you know, he could still be a competent pass blocker and at least decent most of the time in the run game. Versus past years where it was, you know, especially last year, Xavier Suofilo goes down, and it's Billy Price, I think, in the second half of that Chargers game, and then the next week, and then it just, you know, it snowballed really quickly in the trenches. So I think they're a little deeper, and part of that is because Jordan's better.
Yeah, I think that it's probably fair to say he's better. He's always been a pretty good athlete. He's always had pretty good size. He just came into the league young and raw. And if you were to ask coaches, they'd probably tell you he needs to trust his technique more. He needs to be more consistent, like you said, James, because the issue with Jordan has often been throughout his career that he'll be fine for stretches. Mm-hmm. And then he'll, you know, get trucked or whiff or whatever it is. And that happens to most offensive linemen, but for whatever reason, and you guys probably know Ryan Royal Red Legs. I don't know what his Twitter handle is now. He got banned, but he draws a comparison between Mike Jordan and Russell Bodine, whatever his name was. And the idea was, you know, he'll be fine for stretches, and then he'll have a mistake and it'll be catastrophic. and it'll kill a drive. It'll be a bad hold at a bad time. It'll be a, you know, getting beat inside, not handling a stunt handoff, whatever it is. And he was playing beside the Bengals' better tackle last year for the most part, when Jonah Williams was playing. So there could be some improvement, but it might take more for coaches to trust him, and certainly for fans to trust him, because just of what his track record is. And that makes it hard for him. Maybe that's not fair to him, but you got two guys who are newer, don't have that baggage, in Deontay Smith and Jackson Carmen, who are very similar in a lot of ways, where they're pretty good athletes. And, you know, in Carmen's case in particular, he's flashed and has to also work on his consistency. In Deontay Smith's case, we haven't seen enough yet. So I am rooting for Mike Jordan. I've said this a few times. If he can turn it around, that would be great. This is another guy that grew up a Bengals fan, right? And he comes and plays for his childhood favorite team, and then gets a, you know, he took it personally. He said it. Mm-hmm. I took it personally. He feels like he got his quarterback hurt. And I feel bad for him in the human aspect of that. And so if he has rededicated himself and can get more consistent and play better, I think we would all love to see it.
There's nothing more dangerous than Michael Jordan taking something personal. So
that's right.
Very true. We're going to be here for a couple more minutes. We have an insane amount of live listeners, of course, because we have two very, very special guests, Jake Liskow and James Rapine from the Locked On Bengals podcast and Sports Illustrated All Bengals. Their coverage is second to none in covering the Cincinnati Bengals. John, before we answer a couple more questions and bounce on out of here, we have to tell the folks about Symbol. It is the stock market for sports. I don't know, James and Jake, if you've heard of Symbol or not, but it's a pretty cool thing. We've partnered with them, and it's a stock market for sports. So if you play fantasy football, if you play survival football, if you even play the stock market, this has got to be something that you got to look into. And our podcast, if you use the promo code OBI, you get a little bit of a kickback from Symbol for signing up and using our promo code. But it is the stock market for sports, where you can invest in teams, whether it's the Bengals, another NFL team, college football, baseball, whatever the case may be, and you are able to make some money, potentially, if you are savvy enough, on teams that you are passionate about and or teams that you feel have the potential to make you some money. Tell us a little bit more about it, John.
Yeah, so let me just toss it to James. James, who do you think is going to win the NFC West this year?
It'd help if I wasn't muted. The Los Angeles Rams.
Okay, so if James is interested in investing in the Los Angeles Rams on Symbol, he can go to symbol.app/OBI, get his free week of Symbol Gold, and then invest in the Sim Rams at whatever price that is right now. The prices are based off of basically how many people are buying or selling the Rams right now. And if James invests in the Sim Rams on August 27th and they win the NFC West and then they win the Super Bowl, presumably that value is going to go up and he can sell the Sim Rams, or he can keep that investment for the long term. That is essentially how Symbol works. It is a lot of fun. It is something that is not really else out there on the sports market right now, but it is the stock market combined with the NFL, the MLB, and the NBA, and this starting this year, college football. So invest in Symbol. Go to symbol.app/OBI to get your free week of Symbol Gold and have some fun, guys.
It's a great product. We're happy to be partnering with them for the remainder of the regular season there. So good stuff from Symbol. Thanks, John. Guys, I've got maybe just a couple more questions. I know you've got just a couple minutes and we're running up against it, but this has been
lightning
awesome.
Lightning round.
Yeah, lightning round. One of which was from our good buddy, the Orange Arrow. He said, it's Orange Arrow. I have a fun game for y'all. I want y'all to, and I sound probably weird saying y'all because I don't use that, but name the first three plays of the game for Burrow and see who gets the closest to being right. Obviously, the news coming out that Burrow will be playing this week, getting his first snaps of in a game for 2021 this week against Miami. John, why don't you go first this time? Name the first three plays, and then I guess we'll have to go back, watch the tape, and see who's most correct on this. I don't know if you want to go specific plays or If you just want to say run, screen, whatever, I don't know. But
tell me what all 11 guys are doing on all three plays.
Absolutely, dude. We're going right into the playbook here. Brian Callahan's gonna be really mad that I stole these from him, but we're gonna go 1st and 10 at the 27. Brandon Wilson's gonna get a little too energetic out of the end zone. He gets 2 extra yards instead of kneeling. We're gonna go a toss to the right. We're gonna run behind both Xavier Suafila and Riley Reiff to Joe Mixon. Burrow gets out of the way. He gets maybe 2 yards because those plays are really hit or miss for the Bengals. 2nd and 8, we're going to go quick slant to Jamar Chase. He gets his catch down the left side. Maybe the 6-yard game. We got a 3rd and 2, and we're going to go dive right up the middle to Joe Mixon. Gets a 1st down. After that, who knows? Who knows if Burrow just walks off after that, but I think he will get a 1st down in the first 3 plays. Throws 1 pass, maybe air yards, about 5 yards.
Jake, what do you think?
5 yards. I talked to James about this. When we first learned that Burrow was going to play this week, I was like, you know what a good over-under would be? Is depth of target for Joe Burrow's highest depth of target in this game. What's that going to be? That's what I want an odds maker to set for us. But I like the crack toss idea there, John. That's something that they're really emphasizing in this preseason, and it hasn't gone well. They're not getting what they want from the wide receivers on those plays. I don't think they're getting the pulls that they want on those plays from the guard. So I do like that idea, but I think we'll see. I think we'll see a wide zone to start. I'm not going to go crack toss to start. I think we'll see wide zone. I think we'll see smoke, a quick, they're going to look for off coverage and try to get it out to one of these receivers and try to get some yards after catch. And then I think no matter the result, I don't think they're going to try to get a 1st down if it's like 3rd and 15. They're just going to run the ball again, and maybe we do, a counter play or inside zone or something like that. But I don't even know honestly if they're going to ask Joe Burrow to throw the ball. I think they will, but I mean, what's funny to me is when they ask Burrow in the post practice, they got him after practice. Joe's like, yeah, I'd like to get hit. I don't know. I don't think that's going to happen. We'll see if I can make it happen. And when you hear Joe Burrow say, like, I want to get hit, but I don't think it's even possible on the plays that we have planned. What are those plays that he's so sure he's not going to get hit on, if he's passing the ball? So, yeah, we'll see what happens.
Quick James. Throws. That's it. Quick throws. Yeah, that's what's going to happen. I think he's going to throw. You said once, or I think it's more than once. So I'll take the over on 1.5, if that's where it's set at, and it'll be quick stuff. Like you said, a quick screen to Chase, maybe a slant to Boyd. I can't imagine them not going to Boyd at some point. He's the most reliable receiver on the team. He's got the best relationship with Burrow, the best rapport on field. And so I think it's going to be Chase, and it's going to be Boyd or Boyd and Chase at some point. And there'll be a handoff in there too. But I don't buy that they're going to run it 3 times and throw it once, even though that's kind of the, or two, run it twice and throw it once. Bengals want to throw it. And I think Burrow's going to want to throw it too. Otherwise, if he's just handing it off, what's the point of playing? Yeah. Like, I think it's going to be safe throws, but they are going to be throws.
I don't know how hot take I want to get on this thing, so I probably won't go crazy with
say
what
deep.
I'm going
to say. Say a deep
ball. Yeah, someone's telling me, like, maybe they'll take a shot down there just to see to air something out. I don't think so.
There is such
though.
A thing as a relatively safe vertical shot. If you just throw it blindly, you hit the back
it's
step.
It's a two-step
on like
drop.
A five,
all timing.
Like a shotgun three-step drop, and you just put it high and deep down the sideline, throw a quick fade. They could do that if they wanted to.
That would be the only scenario where it's just, if, like you said, Jake, if there is, a specific drawn up play on a deep ball where you can get it out at least somewhat quickly, that would be something I could see. But I kind of agree with James a little bit. I think that there may be a wide receiver screen play to Chase, maybe get both of those guys kind of involved, maybe a run play to the left by Joe Mixon. And I see they've been trying this Joe Mixon screen pass. Unfortunately, I think it was Spain that was called on a hold when they tried that last week, if I remember correctly. Mm-hmm. So they may try something like that and call that a pass. But we'll see. That's kind of my call there. I know we're coming up on a little bit of time for you guys. We've tried to get to as many questions as possible in different avenues. I did see one in one of our live chats. Unfortunately, we've had so many comments and so much engagement that I can't seem to scroll up and find it. But I think now I've asked John this question probably ad nauseum, but I would love to hear it from you guys. And I know some people love answering this question, some people hate it, but it was essentially, where are we at now in terms of predicting wins and losses for this team 2021 with the Bengals? Osai being out now for presumably the year, that's kind of a big blow. We don't know what's going on with Waynes for the foreseeable future, but knock on wood, the rest of the team seems to be in relatively good health. John, since we've talked about it before, I'll let you go first to see if you've changed your mind at all on this one.
I'm just going to quickly say 8-9, get out of the way. But before you guys answer, think about it, because this is potentially going to be an article on Cincy Jungle. So your name might be on the headlines here.
Oh, boy.
I guess James? I'll go. Yeah. 15-2.
Okay, really?
Hey, if we're making headlines, let's just be optimistic, right? It's the end of August. What the hell? If you're going to quote me, I might. Bengals reporter goes wild. Hey, that's fine. You know, let's go viral a little bit. 15.
Talk about knee-jerk reactions on
Joe Burrow is the first player ever, and I actually haven't done the research. Maybe there's been someone else that wins most valuable player and comeback player of the year in the same season, and Ja'Marr Chase wins offensive rookie of the year. Anything else? Oh, no. And then after Joe wins the award, he hands the comeback player of the year award to Joe Mixon, who had ran for 1,500 yards, but Burrow just overshadowed him. How about that? 15-2.
I don't know how we top that one. That's just next level.
Good luck, Jake.
Yeah. What do you got for us, Jake?
People are going to get mad at me or something? I mean, that's, I guess, the relationship that James and I have. The Bengals last year, based on all their one score games and the point differential, should have probably won, I would say, six games. I would say their expected win loss last year, probably about six games. And to me, this is a slightly better team, I think, than last year. I think having a second competent tackle actually matters a ton. So as long as Riley Reiff and Jonah Williams are healthy, I think that makes a huge difference. I think the defense just being guys that are bought in and aren't just like trying to buy their time until they get out of here. I think that helps. So there's a world where they're not actually better than they were last year, and they win like six games again. And I think they could get up to like 11. I think there's a big range, like 6-11 is where I'm at. 6-11 wins. And there's just so many variables, and anybody that listens to me knows that I don't do predictions, and I talk about, you know, this is a high end, this is a low end. I'd say the median is probably somewhere around 500. Obviously, they can't go 500 anymore, but I think I'm pretty close to John there. Is like, that's the most likely outcome.
And real quick, I think to be serious, I think, because we talked about Zach Taylor and his future and all that stuff, 7 is the minimum for me, for him. To me, there is a win number, you know, regardless, at some point you need to see it. Double your win total plus one. If you go 7-10, it feels like they're going in the right direction. And I think Jake's right. Like, to me, if I had to predict today, probably 7 wins. Only aggregate the 15-2 part. But if I had to predict today, probably 7-10. And, you know, if Burrow and Chase really hit the ground running, maybe 8-9, something like that.
Yeah, I think I had 9-8. I'm kind of with Jake a little bit in terms of I'm not a huge fan of predicting, but on Cincy Jungle, we get asked to write these posts. And obviously, a lot of fans ask us about what we think in terms of how the schedule plays out and all that kind of stuff. But I do think we'll see some marked improvement. It's just a matter of, you know, like what James said, is 7 wins enough to keep Zach Taylor around? Is that going to be inspiring enough? Who knows? You guys see anything else you want to get to before we bounce on out of here? We've gone a couple minutes long, and I want to respect your guys' time. But if there's anything else you want to address before we hop out of here, I'd love to hear it.
There's something James said I wanted to react to, but I can't remember what it was, so I'm going to let it go.
You think Zach needs to win 10 games to stick around? Go ahead and say it, Jake. Drop that take.
No, I don't remember anymore.
I knew that wasn't it.
I don't know. Like, the things that are percolating in my head is like Zach Taylor's loyalty to coaches, I think, could be a problem long term for him. And that was going back to the very first question we talked about with the culture and like, yeah, but I can't make it relate, so I'm just going to stop talking.
I have one quick question before we go. John, are you on the same drink the whole time?
You know, I was trying to pace myself. I have a date in a couple hours, so I didn't want to get too white girl wasted here.
I finished this whole dang thing quick. I mean, there's still a little ice in it, but it's just water, ladies and gentlemen. But
it's just water?
You're what are you doing? You sipping that thing?
Dude, it's done.
You needed a straw. You needed a straw with it, you know?
I was thinking, like, maybe he's got, like, a six-pack right here, and he's just going one after the other. I was like, man, look at John.
Now we're matching with my water, you know?
We were joking before we took the air with Jake about some of his past clients, I guess, their power hours at lunch. So John's doing his own version of happy hour or power hour here. But, hey, guys, I know you guys just launched a YouTube channel. I for those who are living in a bomb shelter for the past 4 years, how can people find your show, your YouTube channel that you guys launched? And I know, James, you do a little bit with Cincinnati Bengals Talk as well, and another channel and whatnot. So I guess I'll let you talk about All Bengals and your YouTube channel, James. And then, Jake, if you want to tell us about the Locked On podcast as well and where people can get them in case, like I said, they've been living under a rock for 5 years or whatever, tell us about it.
Yeah, you should subscribe to both of them. We jumped into the YouTube game about a month ago and been really pleased and excited, Locked On Bengals wise, which I'll let Jake talk more about. But yeah, I've been doing Cincinnati Bengals Talk for, I don't know, 6 months, 7 months, and it's been fun to do the video stuff that you guys have been doing, right? It's fun to do the interact with fans this way, and it's just another element to it. You'll see those videos on YouTube. You just search Cincinnati Bengals Talk. And then All Bengals, it's in the name, right? Anything that I think a Bengals fan is going to be interested in, even remotely, I try to write about it. So it's all in one spot for people. So those, it tries to, I don't know, knock out two birds with one stone with that when it comes to league news, along with the latest on the team.
Especially Tom Brady news, right? If you need Tom Brady news, James Rapine is your guy. Follow him everywhere.
You said he didn't even change the culture in Tampa.
No,
Bay,
I didn't say that. I did not say that.
But it's okay.
This is why you got in arguments with those dudes on the AFC North show we did, because you hear things that aren't what people say, although that is what they said. I did not say Tom
Brady.
They said
Juju Smith-Schuster was better than Tyler Boyd. That's
insane. But I did not say Tom Brady didn't change a culture in Tampa.
He might not have.
I said that he was only part of it.
Watch the tape.
I said he was only part of it. And if I didn't, that's what I meant to say. Anyway, you can follow Locked On Bengals everywhere at Locked On Bengals, Locked On Bengals on YouTube, Locked On Bengals on all the podcast places. That's literally our only name anywhere. So if you search for Locked On Bengals, you will find Locked On Bengals. You can follow James on Twitter at James Rapine. I don't know if you said that, James. You can follow me on Twitter at Jake Lisco. And
it's the only Daily Bengals podcast. So if you like the Bengals, subscribe to it.
That's what I was about to say. Also, I was about to say, somebody in the chat talked about Phil Sims. You guys watch that video on Pro Football Talk? The 20 minutes of Phil Sims.
Talking about Chris Sims?
Yeah, whatever.
I can't believe you even mentioned it. It was a joke.
Somebody, I deleted these tweets, but Florio and Sims just are absolutely unhinged. Like, losing their mind, frothing at the mouth over like Joe Burrow wanting to get out of Cincinnati, having second thoughts and the Bengals rushing him back and all this shit. Like it's absolutely mind blowing. Somebody on our YouTube channel asked us to weigh in on it. And so I watched it last night and I tweeted some rants and then I deleted him because I didn't want to get a pissing match with Florio, but it was brutal. Like do not go to profootballtalk.com if you're watching this at any point in time, because you don't want to get your Bengals news from them. It's awful.
Well, now I'm interested because I've never heard of this website, so I might just check it out to see what it's about. But
I did the thing, the Streisand thing.
Yeah, yeah. You said don't look at this thing. Don't look at it now, everybody. Morbid curiosity.
Don't get angry
now
like
look
me
at
and watch the video.
Did you say it was Phil or Chris Sims? I know Chris Sims. I think
it was a young Sims.
Yeah,
I got
the yeah, it was Chris. Yeah, it was Chris. Imagine thinking that the Bengals could tell Joe Burrow to do something he didn't want to do. Come on, that's the dumbest. That alone, like, get out of here. So that I'll leave it at that. I didn't even write about that. That was the one thing I didn't cover at All Bengals because I didn't think it was worth covering.
He has standards. Confirmed.
I only brought it up because somebody said it in the chat, and that's what I forgot that I was going to mention. It was awful, and don't do it.
Well, I've heard about it. I didn't see it. Now I don't know how I feel about watching it now. So I'm kind of tempted, but I don't think I'm gonna now. I'll try and take your advice there, Jake. Guys, thanks for making time for us. You guys kill it with your coverage, and we'd love to have you guys back on. I'm gonna try and come out to hopefully a couple games in Cincinnati. Hopefully coincide with you guys out there. I know John and I have been talking about potentially meeting up. So when I'm out there, hopefully I can say what's up to you guys. We can hang out for a little bit. I'd love to chat sure. it up with you. Hey, this John has been a lot of fun.
Beers.
What's so, that?
John's got the tap. We'll go out for beers.
Well, yeah
I definitely make the most money out of these four for sure.
For sure. No doubt.
Thanks a bunch for coming on our show, guys. And thanks a bunch for your great coverage that you provide all Bengals fans. You can find our show, whether it's Orange and Black Insider, Orange is the New Black by Ace and Zim, or Matt Minnick's Chalk Talk, also on the Cincy Jungle podcast channel. Every major audio streamer, go download it there and or click the little icon. This time it's by James, I think, on our YouTube channel. Go click that bad boy and subscribe to it. Hit the bell, get notified when we, yeah, somewhere down there, Jake's pointing to it. And click the bell so you get notified when we go live, when we have new material, and of course, when we have cool crossovers like this. For John, James, Jake, thanks everybody. Take it easy, and we will talk to you soon. Enjoy your weekend.
Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Want to get a little more from every sip? Smartwater Alkaline doesn't just taste crisp and pure. It's loaded with everything you need to perform at your best, whether you're running marathons or boardroom meetings. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.